but here we go.
Everyone, and welcome to the 25th Hey Arnold Anniversary Show with myself, Aaron Metta. This is part one of two parts of a wonderful celebration of Hey Arnold for the 25th anniversary. So for the first part, we're going to be asking questions to Craig in the traditional way that we've been doing so over the last 10 years. So we're going to talk about Hey Arnold, Hey Arnold the Jungle Movie. We're also going to talk about Hey Arnold Season 6 as well. And also we're going to be getting his thoughts on the animation industry, and we'll talk about various other things as well. Just a few things just to begin. Just want to ask you about the question. So for those of you who do not know, we asked everybody to email in askcraig@aaronmetta.show and email in their questions into Craig. And we got lots of email, and we sorted them all out through the questions. Now, here's a few things with this. As always, we take the most popular of the questions and we put them into a list and we ask them to Craig. So just a few things just to go through. If you don't hear your question in this first part, just do stay tuned, because on October 10th we're going to have the Hey Arnold live stream. So likelihood is that if your question has been answered in this section of the show, it might be asked in the live stream coming up on Old School Lane. If it doesn't appear on either of the parts that are going to be appearing for the Hey Arnold 25th anniversary show, likelihood is it's probably already been asked in one of the previous shows. So check out the Craig Ballard interviews on the Liberated Syndication page, and look out for your question over there, and just listen through and see if it's also there too, because we have some really great interviews with this one, and this is the 10th one that we're having with Craig. So here it is, everybody. I hope you all enjoy it, and we will see. We'll talk some more. Okay, take care. Hey, Craig, how's it going?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so same as before, except we've got one kind of section involved in it, and also I know you're a busy guy, so we're going to go, and by the way, it's really cool that you are a busy guy and not doing nothing at all, so you know, I'm really happy that's the case. So, by the way, just to start off with, while I load up the questions, what is it that you're currently working on at the moment?
We're very busily working on the tracks to a new movie. This is a Ready, Jet, Go movie. Last year, we put out a Dinosaur Train movie with PBS and Universal. And so this is with Universal again. And so we recorded all last month, and this month we just finished cutting the tracks and so on. And I have a couple other projects cooking too. I'm writing and it's very busy.
The race to what's the deadline you're hoping for the Ready, Jet, Go movie? You're raising some particular deadline?
I'm not really sure when it will be put out, but all I know is that Storyboard has been eagerly waiting for us to get the tracks cut. That's usually what happens. You just sort of run in from one, we got to finish it to another. That's how these things go. Next year, probably.
Yeah, cool. We're all looking forward to it, Craig. So anyway, we're here for Hey Arnold. So we're going to fire right through these questions that everybody's put through. So are you ready for the first one?
Go.
Okay. Was it true that you first developed the Hey Arnold pilot episode in your living room, or is that getting confused with your claymation shorts?
That is getting confused with my claymation shorts. I made all three of the Arnold claymation shorts in my living room. On my own little handmade animation stand. It was sort of a hybrid of the Penny stand. The Arnold pilot made for Nickelodeon, however, was done professionally. Okay. In a studio in Glendale.
Yeah. Mind you, given how technology has gone so far these days, would it surprise you that people are now starting to pilot animations and in their bedrooms and stuff like that?
It's very funny. Exactly. It's very important to remember how seat of the pants the development of Hey Arnold was. It was a long time ago in the era of film. I even shot those in 16 mil. The first one was shot in 16 millimeter film on a Bolex. The second and third ones were shot in 35 millimeter. No, the only the third one. Yeah, the technology has changed so much since then that people can barely wrap their heads around how primitive the methods were that we used to use.
It's got a charm to it though, doesn't it? Like, where you saw a Cuphead recently with that video game, now the recent TV series on Netflix, where people still want that stuff,
Yeah, handmade animation has tremendous appeal.
Okay, next question. Can you talk about the creation of Groove Remote from the episode Field Trip, and what was it like hearing Jim Lang and the other musicians come up with that theme for the first time? Also, who came up with the Dino Spumoni songs Smashed and Better Not Touch My Gal?
Those are great questions. Smashed, I'm writing that down. Smashed and Better Not, because those were the first Dino songs. Groove Remote first. Jim and I had done several projects together before we got the chance to make the Arnold pilot, and so we were friends. And I was a big fan of his work already. And once we'd agreed on the kind of jazz we wanted to do, we were listening to acid jazz in the '90s, and that kind of like traditional jazz instruments with hip hop beats was the byword of how we were going to develop the sound. And he made the original Groove Remote, which you may recall has some samples on it, vocal samples. It's much peppier. It exists on the first vinyl Hey Arnold soundtrack collection, by the way. You can hear the original Groove Remote. And I love that tune. I just said, this is one of my favorites. And then Jim, on his own, came up with the idea of slowing it way down for, kind of electric piano bass, like Fender Rhodes piano. And, saxophone was played by Bill Liston, his go-to reeds player and arranger. So that was probably Jim wrote it. Bill Liston and the usual crew performed it. That's Jim on keyboards. The slowed down version's even cooler. It's terribly sad, and that's why Field Trip is so wonderful, is that the melancholy jazz music is it puts you right in with Arnold. And I was just thinking about that because I did a post about Field Trip last week on Instagram, because I'm doing a kind of a countdown of everybody's favorite episodes from season one as we approach the 25th anniversary next week.
Okay,
But
next
that's why
question.
we did that one. And then the songs, Dino Spumoni was basically created because we wanted to have a kind of a low rent Frank Sinatra character. And what we loved about Frank, besides his is one of a kind voice and delivery, was the humor of Frank Sinatra. He's a funny kind of brawling New Jersey guy who lived his life like he was always getting in fights, and he just was a mess. And so you combine that incredibly tender music and singing with his sort of weird personality, and Dino's just like a low rent version of that. So Smash was the first one.
Darling, you left my heart in pieces on the floor. So tell me, why shouldn't I break some things of yours? I'll smash your lamp. the antique chair, that stupid thing you always wear. I'll smash a vase, the radio, those little teacups from Limos. Your wacky paintings on the walls, Dolly, pow! I'll smash them all. Lover, it's just a game. Cupid can take the blame. I'll take the place apart, but don't worry, I won't smash your heart. Not me. Maybe some other clown, but I'm not gonna smash your heart, baby. Talking to Dino over here.
I think that was written, I think Smashed was written by, the lyrics were by Steve Vixton and Jim Lang. Music by Jim Lang. Better Not Touch My Gal. I think John Greenberg wrote that one. I can't remember now. It might have. John Greenberg was around at that point. He was an old Rugrats pal, and Steve and me and John, we were all kind of trying to kind of come up with that Dino Spumoni ethos and Lang for music again.
You better not touch my gal, or I'll pop you in a kisser, pal. You better not even try, or you'll be looking at a big black eye. So listen good, you stupid hood, I'll give you to a count of 10. And if you're not gone by the crack of dawn, you'll never ever eat. No, you better be discreet, or you'll never ever eat solid food again.
You know, those songs were great. They were funny because he's sort of brutal. He's like violent. He's a terrible person.
Yeah. Well, he punches photographers. So, yeah, I could probably imagine, if a guy with a camera doesn't get much leeway, I don't think anybody else
would
either.
That's a straight out of Frank Sinatra thing, you know.
Okay, next question. What was it like voicing Abner?
I love to voice Abner. It's really fun. I mean, really, all you have to do is go like, burr, 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 burr. You know, you just do that. And I remember for the Jungle movie, Abner has a tremendously great part. You know, he's part of helping save the kids by Abner's supposed to realize Abner realizes that this is La Sombra and he's up to no good. Abner could smell it wasn't Eduardo. So he figures no one's going to get it but him. So he jumps overboard and swims off and has that crazy adventure getting back to Hillwood. So for that, I acted it out. I tried to perform all those bits of him jumping overboard and swimming and getting on an airplane and then trying to tell grandma and grandpa what's happening. That's a long bit where he's like, burr, 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 and grandma's like, no, you didn't, you know? So we did that in real time. And then when it came back, generally what's great about the production is when film comes back, then I look at the film and we call that ADR, automatic dialogue replacement, where you look at the film. We also call it looping, and you two picture, you perform again. And so I think I did some Abner along the picture as well.
Cool. Okay, next question. Was Pigeon Man inspired by the Bird Lady from Home Alone 2, Nostra, New York? And how did you come up with the Stoop Kid character?
Pigeon Man. No, I mean, if anything, the Birdman of Alcatraz, which is an older story, and maybe the Home Alone character was even a nod to the Birdman of Alcatraz, but like a loner who can't relate to humans at all, and so develops a tremendous rapport with birds, was based on that. But I gotta say, you know, Joe Purdy came to us, that was his first script, and that was his pitch. He joined us in August of that first year. We've been working since January and we added him to the writers. And Joe looked at what we'd gotten done so far. We had several urban legends by then. And I think Joe just thought, the Pigeon Man would fit into that urban legend genre very well. And he was right. And, you know, so the idea really of it, you'd have to ask Joe, if beyond our thinking about the Birdman of Alcatraz, where that character comes from. It's a little bit, Pigeon Man's a little bit of a Joe Purdy as well. I'd say it's got a little bit of that in there. And then, you know, you add Vincent Schiavelli, a wonderful character who totally he said, I can totally relate to this guy, you know? And so you add all those things, and that's Pigeon Man. And then what's the other character? Oh, Stoop Kid. Again, Stoop Kid was our first. We finally, like, you know, we had done Field Trip, but that was like an urban legend where, like, everybody pitches in to tell Arnold their thoughts about Lockjaw. Stoop Kid was the next urban legend, and we finally got it figured out. Sid sets it up, says the legend of Stoop Kid has been passed down from kid generation to kid generation for as long as I can remember, which is about 3 years. And then he says, take it away, Gerald. And then Gerald, like, literally performs the urban legend. And that was, perfect. Gerald can be the guy who's like an encyclopedia of urban legends. He literally performs it. Everybody applauds at the end. And that was from then on, that's how we did it. You know, Sid's the gatekeeper and Gerald's the teller of the urban legends. And the Stoop Kid, I don't know. Steve Vixton wrote that one mostly. I think the three, Joe and Saul Behar and I and Steve were still kind of co-writing those very first scripts. But who came up with the idea of a kid who lived on a stoop and was afraid to leave his stoop? It's just one of those kind of groupthink things that we all did together. There was wonderful collaboration on the very first stories because we hadn't gotten so busy that we were all off kind of in our own little world at our computers trying to write what was, you know, due next. And so that one had a great, Stoop Kid was a real cool collaboration between me and Steve and Joe and Saul Behar, I think.
Yeah. Always with the Danny Crossy connection, I like to think he's probably like one of the very few kids who survived, you know, not being murdered by the T-1000 Terminator. So,
yeah, you got to, again, just like if you're going to talk about Pigeon Man, you have to talk about Vincent Schiavelli. For Stoop Kid, you have to talk about Danny Cooksey. He's a terrific actor. I remember going, let's get Danny Cooksey. He sounds like a kid, even then I think he was a young adult. Sounds like a kid. He sounds scary and he's got soul, you know, and he crushed it. You know, you think about Stoop Kid, you can't not think of that wonderful vocal performance, especially great because he was an adult. When it was time to bring him back for the Jungle movie, he sounded exactly the same. He sounded so much the same. I said, look, let's just have him do that same joke again. Like, you know, now I can harass people from my stoop and from off my stoop. And he does that laugh, you know.
And then he just flips and goes, anyway.
Exactly. The real joke of that is that how long before you go to anyway? And I remember talking about that with Raimi. And we just got it right down to the frame. Like, how long does he keep laughing before he goes, anyway? Arnold's a great kid.
Okay. Next question. Where did Grandpa Phil's phrase, never eat raspberries, come from?
That is pure Steve Vixton. We were sitting there, Joe and Saul Behar and Steve Vixton and I wrote the pilot. And super, I mean, we didn't have a studio even. I think we were in my backyard, sitting around talking about what this pilot could be. We didn't have anything yet. We didn't have a place to, you know, we met at our houses. And we were talking about Grandpa and what would be a funny thing. You know, what would be a funny, like, Grandpa could be a guy who gives Arnold advice that kind of like you can't even use. Like, what? Why is that advice? You know, Grandpa, the point is he almost always ends up saying, I don't know. I have no idea what I'm talking about. Or I don't know. You're going to have to figure it out yourself. That's really the kind of plain talk that Grandpa does. And so never eat raspberries. Steve just said that. We were sitting there trying to figure out what Grandpa could say next, and Steve goes, never eat raspberries. And I was like, perfect. And I just wrote that down. So that's Steve Vixton.
Okay. Next question. In later episodes, Arnold didn't seem to play the harmonica as much. Was that done for a reason, or had the other characteristics taken more precedence?
You know, I think in the early days, I mean, I was the one playing the harmonica. And so I was kind of trying to kind of insert that in season one. I was just like, how can we have Arnold play the harmonica again? And then after that, I don't know why I didn't do it as much. I think what happened is like you suggested, we just got into all kinds of different layers and different kinds of stories to tell with Arnold and didn't want to repeat ourselves. And kind of sorry. It would have been kind of fun if Arnold every season blew a tune on his harmonica. There's a little bit of harmonica in Parents Day, 60 shows in, but you don't see him playing it. It's just part of the tune that plays when Arnold's dreaming about how grandma and grandpa are doing a great job of being his parents. And Lang asked me, would you play the harmonica there? I think that would be like a cool Arnold voice to go with grandma and grandpa's voice as they kind of fly off together. So I got to play the harp once in a while. I think I might've played it in the Jungle movie too. I can't remember.
Okay. Maybe. Next question. Was the cheese festival inspired by the festival you had growing up, or did you think it was just a funny idea and rolled with it?
Yeah, when we were in the first season, we had a strong push from the New York execs to like, look, if it's going to be an urban legend, I mean, no, if it's going to be an urban setting, it should be like in New York City, for example. There will be neighborhood festivals. And they're like, why don't you do that? I remember that was a suggestion from Nickelodeon execs. Like, you know, let's really kind of lean into this urban setting. And so they were talking about things that happened growing up in New York. And I said, okay, look, a cheese festival is funny and it could work in Arnold's town just because, I mean, any northern city could have a cheese festival. But I remember they wanted more details, like, well, we would have like, then they would have a little place where there was a shrine and people did something for the saint of that neighborhood. And I was like, man, that wasn't my experience growing up. So look, let's just keep it a cheese festival. But that's great. Cheese is funny. I mean, in animation, that's one of the things. For some reason, cheese is funny. If you put cheese in any kind of setting, you know, that's just a very Nickelodeon thing to have, have a cheese themed festival. I love what they did. The artists went nuts with it. You know, the cheese themed things that you can see in the backgrounds on Operation Ruthless and what was the other one? Love and Cheese. That was the return. We just loved it. Let's do another cheese festival.
Yeah. It actually inspired there's a fan game called Helga's Cheese Festival, to give a shout out to Wolf Angel over there. And the way it's like, it's dating game between Arnold and Helga going to the cheese festival. So yeah, that's out there too. Next question. Do Stinky and Sid's moms still live with Stinky's dad and Sid's dad respectively? I'm just curious because neither moms appear at the son's house at any point.
Right. They aren't, you don't see them at home. You know, with Sid, you spend so little time at Sid's house that seems forgivable. I don't know why mom isn't home at Stinky's house. I wouldn't be surprised if we probably just had like too big of a cast in those episodes. The Stinky's Pumpkin, I mean, they spend a lot of time there and it's a very kind of male oriented house, man. There's uncles and grandpas and dad and all these other Petersons, but it's like, where's mom? I don't know.
They're working probably.
Yeah, they're working totally. You know, these are kind of like lower middle class households, and I think everybody has to work to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. That's where they are.
Yeah. Next question: who is your favorite and least favorite characters to write for in the show?
Favorite character: Helga G. Pataki. She wins. I mean, even Arnold, like Arnold's easy to write, but my favorite to write for is Helga because I knew Francesca Smith would crush it. And I literally would write stuff going, ah, this will be great. I'll write this for Franny. And like, you know, when she does her big confession in the first movie, I literally, Steve and I were working late one night writing that scene on the rooftop when she confesses to Arnold. And as soon as we finished, I called Franny and read it to her because I was like, oh my God, you're not going to believe, you know, what you get to say is going to be so fun. And so, yeah, she was the most fun to write for. Mm-hmm. Least fun to write for? I don't know. Like side characters, like say Lorenzo, you know, like here's Lorenzo who really only got like one episode. That was Purdy wrote that script. And I remember we were like, well, what can be different about Lorenzo? And Joe said, well, how about if he's really rich and like he's all kind of buttoned down and like an extremely anxious guy who you know, can't have any fun. And I thought that was, we were kind of layering on a little bit too much on poor Lorenzo. I thought, geez, our one representative of a Latino kid, he seems to have too much, you know. I know lots of very normal Latino kids who aren't like losing their shit because, you know, they got to go to their next meeting or whatever. And so I felt like he had too many layers piled on him and I didn't care for it. So, you know, that would be an example of a character that wasn't any fun to write for. And then once it was established, then what are you going to do? Lorenzo's the anxious rich kid. And it feels like a kind of a, I don't know, a little bit one-dimensional.
Yeah. Next question. Who came up with the episode Helga and the Nanny? And what were your favorite moments from that episode?
Antoinette Stella wrote Helga and the Nanny. And that is one of our darkest episodes. It's unbelievably dark. Helga basically destroys the career of the nanny. And the nanny's no fun either. I mean, the nanny dresses her up like a little Swiss miss and makes her do things that are embarrassing to her. So in a way, the nanny comes off as a kind of a jerk. And I remember when we were putting that, Antoinette pitched that to me. I thought, oh, that'll be funny. She could be kind of like Helga gets Maria from The Sound of Music as a governess kind of. And it'll be like Julie Andrews, who I love. Julie Andrews, as a little kid, watching The Sound of Music and Mary Poppins just one year after the other, Julie Andrews was like she was like a queen. I remember I had a third grade teacher who started the very first day of school, introduced us to the class by singing us a song. And I remember looking at this third grade teacher thinking, my God, I got my own Julie Andrews. So I love the character of Maria, and I think she's a really cool character. And then I somehow felt like in making Helga and the Nanny, It was too fucked up. I mean, it was like the dysfunctional Patakis. Miriam is like really kind of at a bad spot in her alcoholism. And she seems to be doing community service, I think, at that point. And Bob is being terrible. And she comes in to kind of save the day by kind of giving Helga some discipline and some, you know, boundaries and stuff, but not in a particularly cool way. And then Helga decides to basically destroy her, which she does. So Helga's actions are terrible. Then she meets her in the park and she tells her, look, you know, you're just going to have to figure this out for yourself. You know, you did these terrible things and you're going to have to figure it out for yourself. Helga goes home full of, you know, remorse and kind of trying to think it over and walks up the stairs while Bob's like yelling at Miriam, just like, you know, Bob's like had it. He's like yelling at her. And that's going on in the background as Helga slowly begins to do her little stitchery. And you see, it was sort of hopeful. Helga's gonna learn something from this experience. But my God, it's like, I don't know, man. Like, she just kind of like just burned down everything around her getting there. So that's actually a very dark episode, one of our darkest. So, you know,
Somewhat character progression for Helga, because she realizes that she can do terrible things, but then realizes that there's actually massive consequences to them. And then she didn't realize that. And mind you, I think maybe in the 90s, I don't know if you saw this at all, but I think babysitters and like nannies were kind of like seen after the whole Julie Andrews thing, we kind of seen, well, why don't we just make them like, you know, for example, like you have, what's her name from The Fairly Odd Parents, you know, she's a terror to Timmy Turner. And then you have then you have the episode from Doug when they introduced like the nanny who's like supposed to be like Mary Poppins and she's a monster until she ends up going out with Mr. Bone, you know, like, so I think, well, babysitters and nannies didn't seem to make all that great characters in the 90s.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's right. After being raised on the kind of Hollywood, you know, Mary Poppins characters, everybody wanted to do a twist on it. And what can I say, man? By the time we made Helga and the Nanny, we weren't getting hardly any oversight from Nickelodeon. So we'd just go as dark as we wanted. And that was kind of our thing. We were testing to see how dark can we make this? And our point would be, like you said, Helga, you do bad things, there are going to be consequences, and you got to learn from your mistakes. And that's often what we did with Helga. She's really smart. And she should know better. So why does she keep doing these terrible things?
She's young and in a bad family. You know, it's a toxic mix, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Okay, next question. Many fans have noticed the Toon Team plush set, that's in the appendix in the questions, that is planned for release in 1997, and the star bean of Arnold that were only toy that Mattel made during the time that Nick had the license. Was there any plans to produce any more Hey Arnold toys? If so, what other products were planning were in the pipeline but were never released?
The merchandise that was coming out at that time, I mean, I don't know, Nickelodeon in the 90s did not have their merchandise act together. They, every year it would seem like there'd be a new group of people that replaced the old ones. And I would meet with them. They'd come out from New York and I'd be like, look, you know, let me meet with you and talk to you about the products you're doing and make my own suggestions about what you're going to do. And I would get new people every time and they'd say, oh, we'd love to know what your ideas are. And I'm like, crap, I just told the last group of people what my ideas were last year. And they would never have any of that. They'd always be starting from scratch. And so there was a real big disconnect between what was being turned into consumer products then and my input. It's much better now. I mean, now I'm doing things like the we just did that Gerald and Patrick Ewing sports clothesline and you know, packaging, things like that. Just doing my own. I'm helping do I do the designs for like the packaging that we're doing on products and it's much better now. Now they go, it's a beloved project, or you know, it's something that these people I'm talking to grew up on. And they love, they love having me involved, and so it's way better now than it was when we were making the show. Ironically,
yeah, I just think that I mean today I feel like they're a bit more savvy. I think when it comes to this, because like I remember, like I'm also covering another show called The Owl House on Disney. And their fans were making like jokes about, you know, where their clothes appearing on Hot Topic, and all of a sudden Disney making an announcement that, you know, Hot Topic are now going to start doing Owl House merchandise. So it's like, I just think now that I think they're a bit more in tune, I think, than they were, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Absolutely. When I was talking to them about it then, they only had the vaguest idea of what even these characters were and what they were about. Now in 2021, you have people whose job it is to come up with the next t-shirt design for Hey Arnold. They know the character. They know exactly who the characters are and what they're about. I don't know. I posted one. I have a t-shirt where it's Gerald from Gerald's Game in his full Gerald's Game outfit with the crown on. And it's a completely badass shirt, man. It's got the black of Gerald's hair goes up into the black of the t-shirt. It's got this great kind of negative space of the design, graphically incredibly cool. And it's a deep cut too, man. You have to know the series to know why Gerald is dressed like that. Gerald's Game is I think a fifth season episode, and you know, not our most well-known one. So I go around in that Gerald's Game shirt going, dude, finally we got some good merchandise. I mean, back in the day I was like, why don't you guys just have Helga with a fist up going, move it, football head, and that's the whole t-shirt. It took until I think at least the, you know, 2012 or 15 or something like that before you finally saw that. And so it really did. It wasn't happening at the time we were doing the show, and it's finally happening now.
Yeah. Speaking of Helga, let's move on to this question. What was your reaction when you heard that Helga Pataki was going to be announced for the Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl video game? And which character are you looking forward to seeing answer to old Betsy?
I was quite pleased. I saw the thing that they sent me was the design of her in 3D. And I was like, perfect. You know, I actually am surprised. Helga translates into 3D quite well, better than Arnold, who that weird head of his is kind of weird, you know, in 3D. But Helga's, we worked that out a long time ago. We made maquettes of Arnold, Helga, and Gerald to go out to the merch consumer products people so they could see how they would turn and stuff. And Helga looks terrific. And who do I want to see her fight? Reptar.
Ooh.
I was quite pleased that two of my character designs are in that brawl game. So yeah, man, if she fights, I want to see her fight Reptar. And if I was going to choose who I was going to drive, I'd drive Helga, because I want to see Helga kick Reptar.
I don't know. You sure don't want to see her beat up Danny Phantom?
Like, oh, that would be really fun too. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you who made our childhood. Okay. We're going to move on to the jungle movie now. So let's move on to this question. You explained previously about Lila not going to San Lorenzo because she was out of town. What was Sheena's excuse for not going on the trip? And also, Principal Watts was also absent from the trip because he was originally supposed to be in the jungle in the original pitch. So why was he decided not to go either?
That's a good question. I really, what it comes down to is that I wanted to narrow down the trip. We already had so many people in that story that by the time we got to being able to remake the jungle movie in 2017, I decided to narrow it down to that essential squad of the 12 kids, these guys, that excludes Lila and Sheena, for example, and several others, but I just wanted to bring that essential 12. And that's kind of what I've stuck with in this last decade or so. When I'm doing design if I have anything to do with it, that's as kind of as far as it goes. So apologies to Sheena and Lila. But Lila, Lila was like, first it was Ruth P. McDougal, and then it was Lila as he sort of, potential love interests for Arnold to drive Helga crazy. But the saga continued. And by the time we even got to the first movie, I was kind of done with Lila. She had in that Arnold, Kimberly Loves Arnold episode, right? That was one of our very last ones we made in that.
Well, even Arnold said himself he was done with Lila. So it was like, that was the line.
Literally, exactly. I wrote that episode and I had him say that because I was trying to kind of pave the way for him and Helga to finally work it out. And then over the next two movies, they do. So I just cleared Lila out of the picture. And again, apologies to Lila.
Craig, how many first time Hey Arnold fans, when we're watching the show throughout, not really know what is going on, and then they see the whole thing going on with Lila, and then when Arnold says, "I'm done with Lila," they're just a jubilant by that whole thing is over, and they go back to putting Shotaki together.
It's really true. I mean, part of it is we know there's several things at work here. One, Arnold and Helga really are soulmates. They've got the love that will last forever. Arnold is a boy, and so as a boy, I have him be kind of an idiot about love and forever not getting it and not knowing what Helga is even trying to do. That's part of the fun of these stories is Arnold's kind of annoying, like he's kind of dense about that stuff. And Helga, on her part, is incredibly passionately in love and tells us over and over and over again, but she keeps fucking it up too because she has these anger issues and stuff and she feels too vulnerable to tell him how she feels. So it really took all the way through the jungle movie. Now, finally, at the end of the jungle movie, they each have told each other that they love each other. And even then, at the end of the jungle movie, they're still not going to be able to just be a normal couple. And as opposed to their pals, Phoebe and Gerald, who you see just take their hand and walk away, perfectly happy they get to walk to school holding hands. Arnold offers his hand to Helga and she whips it away and says, "Hey, who said you could touch me?" And then she walks away smiling, going, "Good, I'm calling this. I'm in charge. I'm gonna say what the terms are as we figure this out." So the idea would be they really are meant to be together and they're just gonna kind of fumble along. But I forget, that wasn't really that's not the answer to the question. What was the question again?
Sheena wasn't in the in the jungle. So we said she's just one of the side characters. Even Francesca Marie Smith even voices her as like one of the side things anyway. So
yeah, exactly.
So Principal Waltz, he was originally in the script and then he was out of the script. So what was that all about?
Yeah, we changed things around. In the original jungle movie script that was finished about 2001 or two, like we had done several drafts of it by then and we were trying to develop it and make it. By the time we got the chance to come back to it, I thought, let's not even have Warts along. I thought we had enough characters. We had Simmons and Olga were the two adults. And then that was plenty. And Warts was, we were going to have him kind of go nuts when they got up into the jungle. And he was even sort of like what he was like. I think we even had him like, how Curly offers La Sombra to be the camp snitch. I think we were going to have Warts be the camp snitch. And it was just too, it was messed up. We, you know, looking back at what we had done and what we were trying to do for the later version of the Jungle movie, it just made sense to just eliminate him. So Warts isn't even in the Jungle movie at all.
Yeah.
But you know, if we did more episodes, he'd be the principal still. He's a riot. I love Dave Wall. The character of Warts is really fun, but he didn't make the cut.
Okay. I'm just a bit cautious of time. So, and also there's a lot of questions, as you probably might imagine, for Hey Arnold season 6, but given that we've got a live stream coming up on October 10th, I might save them for that. So, I mean, also we're going to have some of the writers from the show as well. So maybe we can like maybe generate some ideas maybe for Hey Arnold season 6. So I'll just Hey Arnold season 6, I'll just leave it with this question. Craig said previously that Nickelodeon informed him that if Rugrats reboot was successful, they might consider reviving Hey Arnold with the Rugrats reboot proving to be quite successful in Paramount Plus. What are the odds of Hey Arnold season 6 looking for now?
It's been a couple years even since then, since we had that conversation. And I kind of feel like telling me that they were putting their energy into Rugrats reboot and they would see how it goes was just the kind of thing that people say at meetings when you just, you know, you're finishing a meeting and you want to get the person out of the room so you can go to the next meeting. And so I don't particularly think any kind of Arnold reboot is particularly on Nickelodeon's mind. I mean, I might be wrong. Maybe they'll call me tomorrow, but you know how it goes. I mean, you and I have been talking for at least 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doing these. And there are times when I think nothing's going to ever happen again. And I kind of feel that way now. I just feel like here we are at the 25th anniversary of Hey Arnold this coming week, and I don't have anything new to announce. If they wanted to do more Hey Arnold, it seems like they would have timed it so that we could be making an announcement right now and making a kind of an event out of the 25th anniversary, but nah. So I don't mean to, be depressing, but they know you when they need you. And if they don't need you, you don't hear anything. And I'm at least happy that I'm working on consumer products. And, you know, I made a cool poster for the 25th anniversary that'll come out next week. And, things like that. But why Nickelodeon isn't rebooting Hey Arnold? Man, I have no idea. We've talked about spinoffs.
I'll ask you this question, Craig. Who lives in the pineapple under the sea? And that's the reason why Hey Arnold's not. Yeah, like you know, just like the fact that they got the Patrick Starr show, and the fact that there's all these ideas now, like all these SpongeBob spinoffs, and that even Squidward apparently is going to get his own show. It's like you know, that's where they are at the minute. You know, it's like, but then you have Disney, who have got running all the way to the bank with Owl House, Amphibia, they got the Ghost of Molly Magee coming out soon. So, like, you know, Disney Plus is the place to be right now. And it's kind of depressing saying that as a Nickelodeon fan from back in the day and a fan of yourself as well. Like, you know, I'd be sitting here saying, yo, hey, well, why would you invest in a Paramount Plus account when you can get a Disney Plus account? You know, it's just,
yeah. I think that's right. What we're looking at right now is network TV and kind of appointment TV where you're supposed to like tune in Wednesday at 8 or whatever. Those days seem to be pretty much gone, and streaming and, you know, small devices that, you know, portable devices that kids watch stuff on their computers and on portable devices and on YouTube more than they're not like, oh boy, Monday night, I can't wait to see another episode of such and such. So streaming and just, you know, existing out there on YouTube is the way things are now. So it's to make the kind of impression that we made in 96, where every kid in America, you know, tuned into Nickelodeon and couldn't wait to see what Nickelodeon was going to serve up next. Those days are gone. And I'm sorry about it, because as a maker of content, you know, our possibilities are, they kind of shrink. And as long as they still need content, and they still need shows that, you know, develop characters and stories, you know, lucky us, because I could picture a world where even that, you know, just that priority just goes away. It would be really fun to do more Arnold stuff. You know, obviously it's the thing that fans of my work like the best and care about the most. And rightly so. Those are characters that I got to really develop and to have, you know,
It's my biggest fear that I feel like, you know, one of these days you and I are going to be doing a Hey Arnold anniversary show, and we'll be talking about, like, you know, how Nickelodeon's basically been bought out by somebody, you know, like, and I think that would just be such a crying shame, because, you know how great Nickelodeon was back in the day, and I know how great Nickelodeon was back in the day, and, you know, you and I see it from two different perspectives, but I think the thing that you and I can probably agree on is that the last thing we want to see is, like, you know, the House of Slime just go down the toilet. You know,
I think it served a really important need when it arrived on the scene. I think there was tremendous vision on the parts of the people who set that all up, and I think now that it's just a much different landscape, and everyone's kind of chasing the other one and kind of trying to figure out what to do next. It's really hard to see something emerge as any kind of a hit anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad to be really busy working on the things I'm working on, and I would love to do more Hey Arnold stuff, but
yeah,
you know, I'm not holding my breath.
We are where we are. So anyway, I thought we'd wrap up with your thoughts, which is a new section I think we have for the Hey Arnold anniversary show. So I'll start with this one. Your thoughts on the Rugrats reboot and being renewed for a second season?
I just heard that they're renewed. I think it's great because I have friends who are working on it. My thoughts on it are, it's very mysterious to me. Like, why go 3D and why go CGI? When I look at, I couldn't believe some of the ways that it got teased. You know, I don't watch much TV, and I don't I might, like, I'll watch old movies, and I'll watch Netflix has some great new series coming out, but Paramount Plus, I don't know what's on Paramount Plus, and no offense, but you know, when they teased it, I was like, well, I'll watch all the shows. I'm really interested to see what's happened, because Paul Germain and Joan Salbaher, Rachel Lippman, a bunch of my friends were involved. But I, instead of getting the chance to see it, I thought I'd see it somewhere. You know, I'm not going to go try to find it on Paramount Plus. So I was looking at just the way they teased it on Instagram, and I couldn't believe it. They showed, like, side by side, the original 2D animation and the new 3D animation. Two things about that were weird to me. One was, really? You guys are just going to redo season one stories? And I asked Joe, I just talked to Joe yesterday in Salabahar. I said, hey, man, the first thing I saw was the barbecue one where Angelica throws the ball over the fence. I'm like, that was your story, word for word and shot for shot. He's like, yeah. And I said, did you get credit as a writer? And he said, I don't know. And I was like, what? What is happening?
Why,
and
I imagine you?
If that's what they did, if they redid a bunch of first season ones, then probably I'm not getting credit either. But
yeah, so, you know, that's what I'm afraid of. Like, even if they did bring back Hey Arnold, like, you know, imagine if they just, like, rewrote whatever was going on in season one, and then just, like, you know, they had other writers taking credit for it.
That would be deeply fucked up. So I know. I don't know. I don't know what they're gonna do. If they asked me to reboot it, I would want to stay on the path that I worked so hard to do in the Jungle movie. And in fact, at the end of the Jungle movie, it was teed up to be a season six where they go back to the sixth grade.
Yeah.
And if they had some other idea, you know, I don't know how it would go. I don't want to jinx it by even speculating about what they would want to do, but the Rugrats thing's a little bit of a mystery to me. And I guess, you know, if they got a second season, it must be working. So good. And if I talk to people who were fans of the original Rugrats, they all say exactly the same thing. The extremely funky, extremely kind of weird, handmade first season is what people really love about the show. And it's not a negative, it's positive. And to see it kind of sanitized and made in 3D, I couldn't believe they showed them side by side. And then, you know, I looked in the comments and people were like, no.
I don't know if you know this or not, but Grandpa Phil in the show is no longer like a veteran from World War II who's like really, like, you know, really wound up. He's all like, you know, rough around the edges. He's like a hippie now. Like,
yeah,
he's basically come out of the 60s.
They made it a new next generation. Everything's supposed to be happening now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I, you know, I, I, you know,
That's way out of my league, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think I'll be going to Rugrats Reboot anytime soon, I don't think. So, anyway, moving on. Your thoughts on Ren and Stimpy returning to Comedy Central?
Terrible idea.
Adult Party Cartoon was a disaster.
Exactly. That's exactly why. I saw what they did when they had a chance to reboot it, and it was really bad. And what would they do now? They can't bring John Kay because John Kay's been disgraced. And yeah. So, that just sounds like bad on top of bad.
I don't think the
kind of like public hue and cry about it was like, I don't think they'll do it. I think the public was like, if you do, we're going to all, you know, be hating on it. So I can't imagine anybody thinking that's a good
The only thing I could think that could be like just like a slight positive is like they say, oh, we're bringing Matt Stone and Trey Parker to like, you know, supervise over it or something like that. Like, you know, they're going to make it kind of like, you know, a second to South Park or something like that. I don't know. Okay, next one. Your thoughts on the Proud Family Disney show, a revival on Disney for its 20th anniversary?
I saw the design for the Proud Family, and that looks more like what I would hope for in an Arnold reboot. It looked like it's still drawn by the original creator. It looks like the designs, they're updated, but it's still 2D. And so I haven't seen any of it, but I've just seen the art from it. And I'm like, well, that's more like it. It sounds like they go, hey, it's reboot time. Everything's being rebooted. We're looking at everything that was a hit in the 90s and trying to recreate it. What would you do? And then the creator went, I would do this with the characters and okay. And then he worked on it. And that's actually a pretty good model for a reboot, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hope it's good. I have no idea.
Okay. Your thoughts on the 25th anniversary of Blue's Clues over at Nick Jr. And your thoughts on Steve's recent appearance on social media saying how special everybody was.
I loved it. I seeing Steve, it's really cool because I remember a couple of years ago, someone going, remember Steve, one of those kind of stories. And then they went and interviewed him. And it was so fun because the adult Steve, he's like a hipster that lives in Brooklyn and, you know, he's cooler than cool. And he has no hair. And so I'm like, oh, I see. How do you bring back Steve when he doesn't have any hair? And so he showed back up in a baseball cap. I thought that was kind of adorable. And I see that they have three Steves now, or three hosts.
Yeah.
Over the two generations.
I think we talked about I can't remember the names of the other two, but yeah, like, well, they are three in the American version, but they stuck with one in the British version. So like the British version, they stick with the same guy. And now he's, by the way, he's the most successful out of the one because now he's doing prime time on BBC One on the One Show.
So, that's cool.
I think out of all the Steve, I think all the Steves and all the people like host Blue's Clues, I think, you know, he's probably the most successful out of the one of them.
Wow, good for him. But yeah. I love Steve's little, I thought that was a super cute when they brought him back and he just said, hey, you know, I've been away and I never stopped thinking about you. I was like, man, that's incredibly tender and cool. So, you know, good for them. A well-handled 25th anniversary salute.
Mm-hmm. And finally, I mean, like, we'll talk about this other question about cartoons going too fast probably in the live stream, but we'll talk about this one just to wrap it up. How do you feel that your show is still being watched and appreciated by viewers after 25 years of the show?
Well, that's the best. It's absolutely the best thing about this. It's something I could not have predicted. When we were doing it, we didn't really have much interaction with our audience. We only knew what the children that we knew, our own kids and the kids of our friends. We knew how those kids felt about it. And I would talk to kids about it and I would do events. Like we used to sometimes bring Hey Arnold to like a local grade school and have a little kind of a little festival or show cartoons to an audience of kids. And that was always great. It was great to kind of see how stuff went over, what they thought was funny and ask them questions about the characters and stuff. But compare that to now where those children are now like 30 something or in their late 20s you know, I mean, I can't believe people have become artists because of it and animators because of it, musicians because of it. I was just reading, I read the comments of my Instagram posts and then, you know, that has really, I've played that up for the 25th anniversary a lot. In fact, when this year ends and I've done all my, you know, kind of like toasts to season one, I might take a little break because I feel like, I don't know, everything's been said. But but for now, I really enjoy that conversation, the conversations that I have with people who are, you know, that were children then. And like the story about that just came out, it was NBC, was Kimmy the Pooh is the name of her Instagram handle. She's a journalist for NBC News, and she's a second generation Vietnamese American. And she said, as a child, this was representation that they'd never had by seeing Mr. Nguyen tell his story about Vietnam. Also, that the Vietnam story was told from the point of view of a Vietnamese person for the first time ever. And how happy they were about that, and how they felt seen for the first time. Adults telling me, you know, the first time I ever felt like I saw myself on TV was my Nguyen or Helga or any of these characters. And I go, oh, I'm really glad. And I get this kind of feedback now that I never got before. And so 25 years in, for it to endure and have people want to continue to ask me questions about it and tell me their thoughts about it is incredibly gratifying and cool. It really is. I mean, I talk about this a lot. David Bowie said in 1999 that he predicted the future. He said the next century is going to be, you don't just make art, you make art, and then everybody weighs in about it, says what they think of it and interprets it, and then it's a complete work of art. And he just said, like, hey, heads up, this is where our art is going, gang. And he was absolutely right, especially media. I mean, I don't know about like fine art and painting and stuff, maybe, but certainly what we do, making TV and making stuff, we post about it, people comment about it, you get your haters, you get your lovers, there's a giant conversation. And I'm very lucky. I get a few weird, you know, comments from people that are way out there, but mostly I get a ton of love, and it's super gratifying. I can't believe how cool it is. I never want it to end, but and there's the main problem is you have to keep making stuff. And so,
I mean, like, Hey Arnold's part of Nickelodeon legacy now. Like, it is one of the staples of Nicktoons, and it will continue living on, you know, in that regard, because you know, it is basically, I would say if Hey Arnold wasn't around, I highly doubt most of the other shows that we have around today probably wouldn't be around, like Big City Greens, for example. And like, you know,
I know. Yeah. They live in Stinky's house.
But you know, like, it's just the whole concept, I mean, not to take anything away from Doug, that obviously introduced the concept on Nickelodeon television, you know, for the first time, you know, probably most revolutionary cousins since the Flintstones. But, you know, Hey Arnold took it up another level and said, hey, you know, not only can you have like this, but you can have like, you know, massive representation, and you can have it in this urban setting, and you can basically have a lot of characters who basically can just be like, you know, anybody else, you know, in life, and you know, have these, you know, crazy adventures and everything like that. And the fact that you brought that to the whole cartoon world, you know, everyone else, you know, gathered around and said, hey, you know, we can do this now, you know. And
yeah, nobody was stopping us, and so we took it to some weird places that, yeah. And then, and then now it exists, and it's canon, and people can point to it and say, why can't we do like Hey Arnold got to do in the 90s? What the hell's going on?
Craig, you know, thank you so much. 25 years. It's still loved it then, still love it now. And yeah, so thanks. Thank you very much for all the hard work that you've done. And also, we'll be checking out the live stream soon. So say thanks to everybody who was taking part in it. So
I'll see you then.
Cool. Thanks, Craig. Right. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to part one of the 25th Hey Arnold Anniversary Show with myself, Aaron Mehta. Coming up next is going to be part two, which is going to be appearing on October 10th over at the Old School Lane YouTube channel. So we'll be talking with Craig and various other people as well, and we will continue to answer your questions over there too, along with other exciting things that we're going to be doing over there. So thank you very much for checking out part one. We will see you in part two coming up on October 10th, and more information follows.
Hello everyone, my name is Patricia Miranda. I'm the co-founder of the blog and YouTube channel Old School Lane. You probably know me from my podcasts such as Casual Chats, PixMix, Dream Machine, We're In Between, and you probably know me from my analytical videos such as How I Stole by Ginger Became a Groundbreaking Yet Overlooked Nicktoon, and the history of Hey Arnold the Jungle Movie. We talk a lot about Hey Arnold here at Old School Lane, and we want to give a major celebration to Hey Arnold on this month of October, because October 7th, 1996 was the premiere of Hey Arnold, and this coming week is going to be the 25th anniversary of the show. And in honor of the special occasion, we're going to have a very, very special event for all of you guys to tune into and hopefully enjoy. It's hard to believe that it's been almost a year since we did the As Told by Ginger 20th anniversary virtual reunion live stream. That was a lot of fun, and I'm really glad that we were able to have all the cast and crew gather together and reminisce about how much fun that the show was and how much it meant for a lot of people. So I want to do the very same thing for Hey Arnold. On Sunday, October 10th at 2 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, which is 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is 12 o'clock noon Pacific Standard Time, we're going to have the Hey Arnold 20th Anniversary Virtual Reunion live stream. Confirmed for the live stream is Craig Bartlett, the creator of Hey Arnold, Jim Lang, the composer, Adam Wiley, the voice of Curly, Justin Shankaro, the voice of Harold, Danielle Judovitz, the voice of Big Patty, and various other guests that I do not dare to spoil. I want to leave it for a surprise. So until then, hope to see you guys there, or I'll hope to see you around soon. Take care.